What's up, guys? Welcome back to Kinda Funny Games Daily for Tuesday, July 9th, 2019. I'm Tim Geddes, joined by... Well, here's the thing. Normally, we have you on Widow Wednesday, but today, we have you for Twitch Superstar Tuesday.
Widow,
ladies and gentlemen.
Put it up there. That's right.
I see you with that blue check on Instagram.
Verified on Instagram.
Oh, yeah.
Partnered with Discord, whatever that means.
Yeah.
Number one streamer on Twitch. Surely is the next thing to happen.
Now, it's coming
soon.
It's
all happening, my friend.
It's coming soon. I see the glasses.
No photographs, please.
There's all the paparazzi. There's so much flashes. I'm blinded right now.
Please respect my privacy.
Wow.
The flash bulbs are going off.
How is the streaming going?
It's going great. I'm actually wearing these are actually, I don't know if you recognize them, these are actually the Denzel Washington Book of Eli shades.
Wow.
That I'm wearing right now.
Wow.
And I'm wearing these because tonight is the big Book of Eli live commentary stream that I've been preparing for the last couple of weeks.
So what's that going to look like?
So what it's going to look like is it's going to look partly like my face, which, you know, I can only apologize for.
Yeah.
And then the script is going to be up on the screen, and then there'll be a little timer on the screen so people can stay synced up with them. We're not actually streaming the movie on Twitch because, you know, copyright and all that. We don't own it.
I didn't know if you get any special rights.
No, I don't get any special treatment. But because the whole point of this is because the movie's now on Netflix, pretty much anyone can access it. So we'll all kind of press play. I'll go 1, 2, 3, go. We'll all press play together.
I love it.
And then as the movie's playing on whatever screen you have, you'll have this companion stream up. Mm-hmm. They'll have me kind of doing a live kind of DVD commentary, and also kind of, you know, as whatever's happening on the screen on your movie, you'll see the relevant script page because the script will kind of move with time with the movie. So it'll be like kind of script to screen comparison, director commentary. I'll take questions from the chat. We'll have fun. 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern. Doors open 6 p.m. Movie starts 6:30 p.m.
Love it.
I'm telling you, it's all happening. Twitch partnership, surely. Surely is can it be far behind?
So twitch.tv/GaryWitta.
twitch.tv/GaryWitta.
Wow.
That's where you want to be.
If this is a success, will you do other movies?
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah?
Well, I mean, we'll see how this one goes. We're actually going to be promoted on the Twitch front page.
Wow.
Whoa. We're on the Twitch front page.
I mean, you're doing something pretty cool.
Making moves.
Very exciting. Love it. Well, ladies and gentlemen, this is Kinda Funny Games Daily each and every weekday right here on twitch.tv/KindaFunnyGames. We get together, talk about all of the video game news that you need to know. If you want to watch it not live, that's cool too. You can watch it on youtube.com/KindaFunnyGames or on roosterteeth.com. If you want to just listen to us like so many of you do, we appreciate that. Just search for Kinda Funny Games Daily on your favorite podcast service, including Spotify. Thank you very much for all that. If you want the show ad-free, you can go to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames and you can get that there. We love giving you options, right, Gary?
You can get the show on Spotify?
Mm-hmm.
That's amazing.
Oh yeah.
You're everywhere. Yeah.
I know.
It's love crazy. It. There's no escaping the Kinda Funny
phenomenon.
All of
our shows are everywhere, with the exception of We Have Cool Friends. It's still not on Spotify. We're working on that. But there is a new We Have Cool Friends out. Came out yesterday. It is with Brian W. Foster.
Yeah, I watched some of that.
From Critical Role. Excellent episode. Greg Miller is very proud of it. You guys should go check it out. That show definitely needs some more love right now. Another piece of content up right now for some housekeeping. My birthday roast is up in full on youtube.com/kindoffunny. We're all very proud of it. No one goes easy on me. How did you?
I always feel like roasts is often the most difficult kind of comedy because you got to go hard, but you don't actually want to hurt anyone's feelings.
Exactly. It's the type of thing, you know me. It's like,
right.
I understand what type of a jackass I am. You got to be in on the joke or else you are like actually an asshole.
How did it feel there sitting in that stool taking all that abuse?
It was the best. It was the absolute best. You can see the joy in my face. Go to youtube.com/kindoffunny to check that out.
And as I said to you before the show, we were just talking. Andy Cortez, who knew? Comedy superstar.
Oh, man. Well, many people knew.
I didn't know. Yeah, I knew he was a talented man. I knew he could play the guitar.
You need to see him do his stand-up. When he does.
He killed it.
It's freaking incredible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really good.
Andy Cortez is a man among men. Thank you to our Patreon producers, Colton Yoder, Blackjack, and Muhammad Muhammad. Today, we're brought to you by Hims, but we will tell you about that later. For now, let's begin with what is and forever will be the Roper Report. It's time for some news. We got 5 stories today.
A baker's dozen.
Thank you for that, Barrett. Cuphead
Yeah.
is getting a Netflix show. Did not see this one coming. This is pretty cool. This comes straight from Studio MDHR. Coming to you in full color and cine sound, it's The Cuphead Show. Witness the wondrous Inkwell Isles as you've never seen them before in an original series inspired by classic animation styles of the 1930s. It's now in production by the talented team at Netflix Animation. Ryan McCaffrey over at IGN has a little more info here. It will also be hand-drawn, though not entirely to paper this time, and not by Studio MDHR themselves, but instead by Netflix's own in-house animation studio. Quote, we're not going to be animating this ourselves because it would never be finished, Cuphead co-creator and all-around great guy Chad Moldenhauer told IGN with a laugh during a phone interview. The current goal is to stay as far away from computer-assisted puppeteer animation as possible, he added. The idea will still be that every frame is hand-drawn, but probably not on paper. It's going to be hand-drawn, but digitally. Tradigital.
I like that.
Tradigital. Wow. Word of the day, everybody. I really appreciate that. Though Cuphead co-creator Jared Moldenhauer told IGN that the show is still in the beginning processes and as such has no release date as of yet, we do know that the Cuphead show will follow Cuphead and Mugman in comedic adventures across Inkwell Isle. The press release describes it as such. The character-driven comedy follows the unique misadventures of the impulsive Cuphead and his cautious but easily swayed brother, Mugman. Through their many misadventures across the surreal home of Inkwell Islands, they always got one another's backs. We asked the Moldenhauer brothers to elaborate on the style of comedy they're aiming for, and Chad said it's safe for kids, but written so there are also things that adults find funny and appeals to a wider audience. It's not a toddler show or a little kid's cartoon. It's safe to say that the showrunners are aiming for the same kind of vibe that the game hints at. They'll be taking that idea and expanding it. Barrett, can you bring up the image so people can see?
Yeah, just give me a second.
There you go. So this there is all that was shown here. We got a Netflix original series, The Cuphead Show, coming to Netflix, also starring Mugman. You got to love it. I would say that it's a similar style to the game, but it is quite different here. Like Mugman,
it looks pretty similar to
it's
me.
It's SpongeBob-ified.
There's definitely a SpongeBob element. You can see kind of in the cheeks. There's a lot more going on. Mm. And even the use of colors. I'm here. It looks different than the game, but I kind of like that. Let's have
I'm into it.
A different take on it. Gary, you said you had some hot news, some breaking news.
Oh shit!
That has not ever been heard before. What is it?
No, I mean it's not. You know, by the way, you took what I told you and just overhyped that massively.
I overhyped something? What?
Tim Getty's the master of hype. Also, I have a friend who works in animation. Her name's Chris Nee, and she created the show Doc McStuffins. On Disney and the Vampirina. She did a bunch of stuff at Disney and became a top kids animator. And now she has a big deal at Netflix. And when this was announced, she just happened to tweet out today, follow her on Twitter, Chris.Nee, she's cool, that her office is actually right down the hall from the guys that are animating the show. So she goes past there and like sees glimpses of like what they've got up on the walls. She said it looks amazing.
Yeah.
So that's all I've got is that, someone I know has seen some shit on some walls and said it looked pretty good.
And there's your breaking
news.
There's your boom hype.
Someone I know saw some shit,
on a wall and said it looked pretty good.
Oh, Gary, pretty fucking good. I love you so much. Does this excite you at all, though?
A little bit. I've got to be completely honest with you. That style, I totally. There are certain pieces, there are certain films and certain games and things like that I admire more than I enjoy, and I admire Cuphead more than I enjoyed it. It's not really my kind of game. I really, really admired how they captured that kind of feel, that feel of kind of that lost era of animation of the 1930s. It's that style of animation is not particularly my cup of tea. But I think that as an exercise in recreating that style of animation, they did it flawlessly. I mean, it really does look like they found some old cartoon from the 1930s and just colorized it, right? It looks absolutely authentic to the period, and that's amazing. My guess is why you're seeing the slight change in just that piece of promo, is they SpongeBobbed it a little bit, is I feel like they probably made the decision that creatively, artistically, they wanted to just take the edge off the look. Because I feel like that style of animation, like my kid wouldn't like that. The Cuphead, she's 7 years old. The Cuphead animation, I think she would probably find like too scary or too weird. This is the way the characters will kind of like weirdly vibrate and stuff like that. Like that was how it was done back in the day. But I think to kids today, that for certain aspects of the audience, that could be off-putting. So I think what you'll see with Netflix is it'll be recognizably Cuphead, but they'll have taken just a little bit of the edge off it. That's my guess.
Yeah, I am really excited about this Cuphead. as you guys all know. Definitely my type of game. Absolutely loved it. Growing up, I loved this animation style.
You did?
Yeah, I did. And my brother in particular really loved it. Like, he loves the weird, spooky, like, the skeletons dancing shit. And when we first saw this game years ago at GDC, I was just like, and everyone that saw it was just like, how is this a game? Like, how is this real? And the fact is, we've now played it, and it's consistent throughout the whole thing. I love the idea that Cuphead could become bigger than just this fairly small indie title, you know, that can now, like, get out to the masses
and become a big step.
This is a huge step, and I feel like this could get more money, which allows bigger budget, which allows more games. Like, all of this is good news for Cuphead fans.
Yeah, plenty of people who have never heard of Cuphead will watch the show, discover the game, maybe go play the game.
Yeah, so that's all really cool. I think that the Cuphead world could suit itself well to this type of animated show.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And, like, we know so little about the bosses and the characters, but, like, even with the weird little cutscenes that they had, like, they really did a good job of, like, making you really hate Mr. Dice, like, the Dice Man, and, like, all that stuff. Like, they did a great job with all that stuff.
His song
is. Is there a Cuphead 2 in the works?
There's DLC.
Okay.
Yeah, there's the Delicious Last Course, I think it was called.
I'll look that up.
It's coming out. They just last week said that it's going to be 2020.
Yeah, the Delicious Last Course.
So it's very, very exciting for me.
And it's on, correct me if I'm wrong, debuted on Xbox.
Yep.
Now it's on Switch. Mm-hmm. PlayStation still waiting?
No PlayStation.
There's not going to be a PlayStation version?
I doubt it because of weird licensing stuff. Because at the end of the day, it is a Microsoft.
Right.
Funded.
Yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah, but I think this is really cool, and I didn't expect this at all. But
no.
Congrats to the guys, man. Studio MDHR. Like, when you do really good work and work really hard, like, good things happen.
Can you imagine, like, being in the office the day they get that Corey Netflix wants to make an animated
cartoon out of your characters?
Huge.
Like, dude, next step, Smash Brothers.
A Netflix animation is doing great work. One of my one of our family's favorite shows on Netflix is a show called Hilda, which is an animated show that they make, comes out of that same division. Brilliant.
Mm.
Go check out Hilda, and that'll make you excited about Cuphead because it's the same studio.
Hell yeah, man. There you go. Getting that inside knowledge from the
walls.
Yeah,
my inside knowledge was reading a tweet that was publicly available to everyone.
I love it, man. All right, next news story. Sean Murray says that Anthem and Fallout 76 devs should stay quiet. This comes from Alex Avard at gamesindustry.biz. Speaking on No Man's Sky during his keynote panel at this year's Develop conference in
Brighton,
UK, Murray explained how Hello Games turned things around for its seemingly sinking ship, mainly by focusing on post-launch development rather than getting itself into any deeper hot water with more false promises. Quote, "We went about 2 years without talking to press at all," says Murray, "and we went about 3 months without saying anything to the community either. That was really hard. I sat down so many times and wrote the perfect blog post that was going to explain everything about the game's development and the roadmap going ahead, but I could see that it didn't hold credibility with regards to where we were at. There have been a number of games that have since come out that had a polarizing launch and that explosive mix of loads of people playing it but also promises, and I can see EA, Microsoft, or Bethesda try to placate players by just talking to them, but for right or wrong, it just doesn't really work. You see this all the time when a big publisher will talk to the community and try to solve the problem and then get embroiled, taking up more and more of its headspace. Interestingly, Anthem's community has been getting increasingly aggravated with BioWare's lack of communication on the game's future, but Murray's world-weary comments perhaps suggest this is for the best, allowing the studio to get on with the hard work of making the game it was meant to be without getting distracted with maintaining face. Quote, talking about features when a game's already out isn't that credible or interesting, he later tells Games Radar in a follow-up interview. Your actions are so much more important than what you say. What do you think, Gary?
I think this is an interesting story. I think No Man's Sky has been a really interesting story, one of the more interesting turnarounds in video game history. I'm sure you remember in the build-up to No Man's Sky, the problem was, if anything, they were over-communicating, over-promising. A trillion, quadrillion planets, and you'll be able to go, you know, any time, that I've been hearing that for years, you know, Peter Molyneux, we can go back to Peter Molyneux and go back to the 8-bit days of people saying, this game is going to change your life and cure cancer, and, you know, you'll be able to play it forever. And those games rarely deliver on that promise. Yeah. If you over-promise, you've got to over-deliver, and it's rare for developers to do both. So No Man's Sky, if No Man's Sky had come out with less hype, I think it would have been better accepted when it first came out. It was because they overpromised so massively.
Too many E3s. I think they had too many E3s and too much like priority placement at PlayStation shows.
Right.
You know, it's like that. Right. That's really kind of saying something and putting the game on a pedestal.
And then they got themselves into all these problems where the thing always happens where, you know, it shows up on the internet where someone puts up the screen that was shown, that was promised, and then what it actually looked like. You know, I remember there was a famous video of this, of like all this amazing No Man's Sky stuff, and it cut to what the game actually looked like at launch and the theme tuned for it that someone had put on it, and it was very funny. Do you remember this, Barrett? It was the theme music from Jurassic Park, but played on a sad little kid's trumpet.
Yeah.
And it was great comedy.
Yeah,
kudos
to
whoever put that together. But then what's interesting about it is the first part of it was over promise, under deliver, right? And then they went into phase two, which is under promise, over deliver. The pendulum swung the entire other way, and that worked out much better. No Man's Sky, the new version.
Years later, though.
Yeah, that's true. Later. But eventually, I still admire what they did. They brought it back. They saved it. They refused to quit. They didn't let all the negative reaction get to them. They said, "Let's go dark, shut down, and let's do what we should have done in the first place, which is just focus on getting this right. Let's get it right." And it took them two tries, but they got it right. And you know, the Redditors put that nice little thank you outside their. Did you see that?
Yeah.
They paid to put up a billboard outside their offices, and they won the community back. So good for them. My question to you, Tim, is: do you think they're right? What do you like? If you were a frustrated Anthem gamer right now, or a Fallout 76 game, would you rather see more communication or less?
I really do think it's a case by case contextual thing. I think that, like I was saying, like Hello Games had such an interesting place where they were funded by PlayStation for so long, like they were being pushed by PlayStation, and that meant that they needed to hit certain deadlines, and they totally fucked that up.
Right.
So then kind of just going silent after that, that looked like defeat.
Yeah.
You know, for them to come back later, that's a great story and that's awesome and like good for them, you know, because at the end of the day, like the famous Miyamoto quote, right? Like
a bad game is bad forever, but a late game is only late for as long as it's
exactly.
late.
Exactly. It's like, so this.
But the I thing is, like people don't think that's true anymore, because you know, now you can patch a bad game. So
and,
people don't
and
think
here
that.
We are.
Yeah.
Like this is a perfect example of just like where we're at in 2019 of video games can change and adapt. And at some point, like No Man's Sky Beyond came out, and like there was a community of people that really rallied behind it, and countless articles of people being like, whoa, this game really turned around.
Right.
But like that doesn't change the fact that there were even more articles in 2015 or 16 or whenever that was that were just ripping it apart. You know, like that happened, and that affects all of these developers and all their lives and everything, and all the gamers that were disappointed with what they were not getting, what they were promised, right?
Right.
And now we're seeing this years later, and I just feel like as time goes on, people need, other devs and publishers need to learn from the mistakes of others. And that's why when we see Fallout 76 launch the way that it did, like that is completely, completely unacceptable. This is Bethesda we're talking about. This is Bethesda. Like Todd Howard came out on stage hyping up Fallout 76 at E3, and that game was released.
One of the great communicators.
Yes,
right. One of the great. You know, people always loved Todd. I mean, until recently, always loved Todd when he came out on stage. Mm-hmm.
And that game was released months later, and now we're hearing that they knew it wasn't going to be where it needed to be, and whatever. It's like that's not cool. That is communicating in the worst way possible. And in that way, I totally understand what Sean Murray's saying, because now at E3 this year, we had to see them come out and kind of be like, make a bunch of promises for how they're going to fix Fallout 76.
Yeah.
And it kind of just feels like a weird, damned if they do, damned if they don't.
Yeah.
Right. If they don't say anything, people will be like, wow, they really didn't say anything, a la Anthem at EA Play, even though there wasn't a great place for them to talk about it. But them not being there is ridiculous. Right. But at the same time, I just feel like we're talking about some of the biggest publishers in the world.
Yeah.
And
EA, BioWare.
When you're looking at EA, when you're looking at Anthem and how their launch went and how their post-launch content is still a disaster and still not hitting the mark, and then they're just kind of totally radio silent, it's like that's not good. I feel like there is somewhere in between where it's like you need to communicate, you need to say where you're at, you need to apologize. You know, but you also don't need to like give people every single step along the way, or else people kind of just
I think you're focusing
too much on the communication.
Listen, I do think you have to put some weight behind what Sean says, because he's lived this advice, right? He's done it. He again, one of the great turnarounds. The game was savaged on release. Mm-hmm. They went dark and they saved it. If you there was a big redemption narrative in No Man's Sky. So it worked for Sean. He said, "Go quiet, go dark." and come back and surprise everyone. I don't know, given that with, because it's EA, because it's BioWare, because it's Anthem, and there's so much press scrutiny, I don't know if they have the luxury of going dark. I feel like they worry that if they were to just completely go dark and people had no expectation of what was coming, they would just give up on the game and go somewhere else. And they could lose the few players they still have left. Mm-hmm. So I do think you have to communicate. And the last I heard out of Anthem was, didn't they say they were going to be taking... they were going to be taking a course similar to what Sean is now advising, which is we're going to be communicating less, we're going to be promising less. Mm-hmm. Let's just deliver the stuff. Like you'll know about a new feature in the game when it's actually shipped and ready to go. But yeah, we're not going to keep writing checks that we can't cash, because yeah, that's been the problem all along.
Yeah, things like this just get very complicated because I feel there's the community of people that potentially would have played the game when it first came out, right? The people that were interested in the game. Then it comes out and it's flawed and you lose a giant chunk that were interested and they're like, hey, we're not getting what we're promised. We're just fucking out. Then you get the percentage of people that happened to and are angry about it. Then you get the percentage left that's like, hey, you know what? We're just going to stick through this. We see what's here. We see the flaws, but we still enjoy it. We're hoping for it to get better. And you kind of get stuck in this place where I think all three of those groups kind of want to hear different things. Some people are like, just put your head down and work on the game. Fix it. Other people are like, we want to hear what the problem is. But what group just wants to hear what the problem is and what's being done to fix it, but isn't actually ever going to go back to play the game no matter what it is? Right? Like, how many people went back to play No Man's Sky Beyond even after it was fixed? 2 years is a long time.
It is.
Right? And it's at some point, it's like, it's an old game. Sure, it's new, like a new coat of paint. It's still an old game that people have put in how many hours?
I don't know, Tim. I kind of felt like one of the things that was successful about when No Man's Sky Beyond came out was that they succeeded. How much they pushed this, I don't know. But I feel like the media narrative that the websites and the publications went with was like... excuse me, that this is a whole new game now.
Mm-hmm.
Like they've changed so much. This is really the launch. This is the true launch of No Man's Sky. And that's exactly what Hello Games are going for. It's like, you know, we better get a second chance at this. Not just some update, not just some new look of paint. We've changed the game so fundamentally that you really should give this a second look. I did. I'm a perfect example of it. Mm-hmm. I didn't play I was excited about it. But I remember thinking, really? This sounds a little bit Molyneux-esque. This sounds a little bit like you're overpromising. And then... when the game came out, I checked the reviews, yeah, sad trumpets, mm-hmm, and I didn't play it. But then when it came back, I read the reviews of Beyond. Oh my God, now it's what it should have been in the first place. That's when I went and got it and played it.
Yeah, okay. I mean, that's great. You know,
I don't know if I would have been inclined to come back if I'd have felt burned. Yeah. I missed it the first. If I'd have felt burned the first time, would I have gone back the second time? I don't know. But I missed it the first time, and I definitely went in on the second try. Yeah. I think a lot of people probably did.
Yeah. I mean, it's just interesting because at what point was that done just to, you know, please people so that when they make their next game, it's not a disaster going into it?
Right.
You know? And at what point should it have just been like, hey, cut your losses and just work on the next game? I don't know. But either way, I feel like there isn't one answer for this. And it's the real answer is just don't make promises you can't keep.
Don't over, yeah, games. Don't over
just
promise.
Make the game, and like if you need to delay it, delay it.
And this has been a problem at E3 for years now. Ubisoft have been doing this for years. Mike over at Penny Arcade, I believe, or Jerry, one of them, coined the term bullshot for mm-hmm. when you see a screenshot that is clearly bullshit. It's like, that's not what the fucking game is going to look like. Ubisoft have done this for years now. I don't know if you remember the first time that they showed The Division mm-hmm. at E3. Go back and watch that video. That looks like a next-gen title still now, because it was bullshit. Yeah. And when the game actually
came out... Remember the Killzone 2 trailer?
Oh my God. As good as the games look when they come out, you can't help but compare them to what was promised. And the over-promising ends up biting you in the ass. They did it with Anthem. Go back and look at the E3 video for Anthem. The game still doesn't look even anything like that.
Hmm.
Why are you doing this to yourselves? The developers must be watching these E3 presentations going, what the fuck? We can't do that. What are you telling these people? Yeah. We can't deliver that in the time that we have. We don't even know if you've got fucking rockets in the game yet. Are you flying or are you not? We know all this through Jason Schreier, right? We don't even know what the fucking game is, and you're promising all this shit. What are you doing to us? Well, we've seen the result.
There you go.
Stop it.
Next news story. There's some leaked model photos of Super Nintendo World.
This I am excited about.
This comes from Alicia Stella from OrlandoParkStop.com. Barrett, can you please pull these up?
Oh, my goodness.
So here we go.
I had a dream last night that looked exactly like that.
Yeah?
Yep. Every night.
Oh, man. I can't wait to go to this with you,
Barrett, are you excited about this?
Hell fucking yeah.
Fuck yeah. Let's all go.
So
kind of funny Japan trip.
Yeah.
Surely.
I'm all about that.
Premium content.
All about that.
Premium
now,
content.
Here's some context for this. This is the Super Nintendo World that's going to be part of the Universal Studios theme parks. They're expanding out. It's going to be at Universal Studios Japan in 2020 to coincide with the Olympics in Japan. It will be at Universal Studios Hollywood in 2021 or 2022.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Universal Studios Singapore by 2025 and Universal Orlando Resort around 2023 is what they're saying. All of them are going to get different variations of it. It sounds like the Singapore and Orlando are going to be the most complete.
Yeah,
getting the most.
Yeah,
of it.
Sure. So should we just wait until Orlando gets done? Because the Orlando version is usually the better version.
If the Orlando one's only like a year behind, I mean, I feel like it would obviously be easier to go to wait another year and go to Orlando, but it would be more epic to go to Japan.
It's true.
It's true.
That is true. I'm down to do all of them.
I'm just saying, like with Orlando stuff, it's like you usually get the more complete one in Florida. Because like I went to Harry Potter Land. Here in California, and I was like, oh, that was fun and cute. Took us like 30 minutes to do everything, and then I was talking to my grandparents, and they were like, no, dude, the one in Florida is like where it's at.
I mean, there's just more space.
With Harry Potter, that was the first one, right? They opened the Orlando one first.
And then they opened the one in California.
And you have
and
to remember, they just have more space there. Like, Disney World is way bigger than Disneyland.
It's so great.
Yeah. So, I'm going to read a little bit of the story here. This morning, new photos were found that appear to show a model of one of the Super Nintendo World lands designed for Universal theme parks. The images, which were shared on social media by the unofficial Universal Orlando podcast, show the main courtyard areas for the Mushroom Kingdom as well as Donkey Kong Country.
Oh my god. I didn't see this one.
Given the fact that Donkey Kong can be seen in this model, it's most certainly a model designed for the now canceled plans for the land in the Kids Zone area of Universal Studios Florida. Those plans were supposedly moved to Universal Orlando's new theme park being built a few miles south of the current property, tentatively named Fantastic Worlds. Given what I have reported on in the past for Super Nintendo World and what other rumors have been floating around, there's absolutely no doubt that these images show an official model of the land. In fact, if you take away the Donkey Kong section, this model is nearly identical to what they're currently building in Universal Studios Japan. The model also lines up with officially released concept art for Japan and now Singapore as well. The promotional images and video feature many of the same landmarks and structures seen in the model. The model, of course, features many more fine details. For the main attraction, which has guests entering through a Bowser's castle, the sign merely says Mario Kart, which may very well be the official name for the technologically advanced dark ride attraction, or the sign may not say the entire name. We can also see the name of the land's main quick service location, Toadstool Cafe, located on the lower left. This restaurant looks like Toadstool's house. There you go. So just from this, like looking at the picture here, you can see little Toad House there. That's where you get your food. Great. Cool. Awesome. Then you get Bowser's Castle, and in there is a dark ride of Mario Kart. And my God.
Yes.
I'm so down for that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right?
That sounds awesome. From what everyone's talking about, it's kind of like an advanced version of like the Midway Mania Toy Story ride at Disneyland where you kind of are interacting.
It's going to be like all neon, like, I mean, like, kind of like luminous shit and, you know, like black lights and all that kind of scary shit.
Exactly. So you're going through, but you're actually like in a cart and there's like, you're playing Mario Kart with people around you.
Awesome. Oh my God.
Which sounds amazing. The family Omnimover ride appears to be named Yoshi's Adventure, which is a fitting name for a ride where you get to ride on the back of a Yoshi. A line of colorful Yoshis can even be seen in the main photo. This is the ride path for the Omnimover. So you can see it there. Go to the next picture.
This is the main one.
Okay,
are you talking about DK or
no? No, no, no. Go to the one more over to the left. Yeah.
Yeah, the big
one. You can
see
the Yoshis there.
Yeah.
They're all doing their Yoshi thing, Yoshin around. Then in the third image of the model, we can see Donkey Kong Country. So before you go there, go down a little bit. You can see that warp pipe.
This guy?
Yeah. You go through the warp pipe, boom, you end up in Donkey Kong Country.
Wow.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is real life.
Holy shit, guys.
In the third image, we see all of Donkey Kong Country, which guests would access through a warp pipe located under the Yoshi ride. In the model, we can see Funky Kong's plane, which is used as an outdoor gift shop. We can see Donkey Kong's treehouse, which is the backdrop for a meet and greet stage.
Mm-hmm.
So, Barrett, one day you're going to get to meet and greet Donkey Kong.
I need to talk to Blessing, and we need to figure out like how to get ourselves here and just have us Have us do a vlog of meeting Donkey Kong.
You gotta love it.
You gotta do it.
You gotta.
It'll be the greatest content you guys have ever done.
Yeah.
There are interactive characters along the main path as well, like Rambi the Rhino. And of course, there's the main roller coaster attraction, the Donkey Kong coaster called Minecart Madness.
Oh my God.
Yes!
It would be partially outside as well as feature inside scenes. We can see that the main entrance is a temple with the minecart jumping the track right at the top of the temple above an integrated waterfall feature. The land would clearly feature a tremendous amount of kinetic energy. This is crazy looking.
But the real question is for this meet and greet area. Obviously, we're going to get Donkey Kong. We might get Diddy Kong. But are we going to get Lanky Kong? Who knows?
I highly doubt Lanky Kong will be making any appearance
here. Fuck
you,
Tim. Let me dream.
Hey, you can cosplay. You just go in. Again, we're still not entirely certain which Super Nintendo World lands will be getting the Donkey Kong Minecart coaster. While it was originally slated for the Kid Zone area, which I'm pretty certain is where this model was constructed for, there's still no telling if it will make it to the new theme park in Orlando or not. As far as Japan and Hollywood, the two Nintendo lands actually under construction right now, and neither appear to be getting the Donkey Kong ride, at least not at this time. Japan appears to be getting everything else we see in the model, though. Hollywood appears to at least be getting Mario Kart and some of the Mushroom Kingdom Courtyard, but will likely not be receiving the Yoshi ride either.
So you might have to go to Japan for the full experience.
I don't know. They're going to have to go all over the place, you know?
God damn
it. Clearly, if you want to experience everything, you're going to, because it sounds like there's going to be no one park that has everything. You're going to have to go on some kind of world tour.
If I have to. Anyway, very exciting stuff. I remember long ago on Gamescast when this was first announced, we did what we'd like to see from a Super Nintendo World thing, and we came up with a whole bunch of ridiculous rides. So go watch that for some stupid ass fun.
This news gives me hope for the future of the human race.
Thank you.
It really does. Yeah. It's so exciting. I've been saying, I mean, not that it takes any great genius to come up with this idea, but I've been saying for years that they should do something like this. Why doesn't Nintendo have like a Mario theme park? Like you, it's a license to print money.
And here we go.
And now it's finally
printing
happening.
Printing that money, man.
I'm so
get
excited.
Get it, Miyamoto.
I'm so
you
excited.
You deserve it. Next news story. This comes from Adam James at Joysticker. Stadia only supporting Pixel at launch. Google Stadia won't support very many mobile phones at launch. In fact, it will only support 4, kind of. The kind of is that they're all variations of the same phone. The 4 phones that will be supported by Google Stadia at launch are Pixel 3, Pixel 3a, Pixel 3a XL, and the Pixel 3 XL. There you go. Additionally, any tablet that runs Chrome OS will also be supported. I'm not too surprised by this. That is just at launch. Greg had a note here. He says he asked about this at E3 and was told on the record that iOS devices won't be far behind. So I think it's just going to be the typical rollout plan. You know, normally when we see mobile games come out, bigger release mobile games, I would say, sometimes they're on one side first, a couple months later.
Usually, I'm not that surprised. Usually, anytime Google introduces a new service, Google and Android products and devices are supported first. Mm-hmm. Like, it just makes sense. But yeah, you can't leave. I mean, there's too many iOS users out there to leave them out in the cold. They've got to be invited. I'm in on the founders level for Stadia. I got the starter pack. Mm-hmm. I'm in, but I'm an iPhone guy. So yeah. I you got to take care of my people too.
Yeah, and I'm sure that they will soon enough. I also think that like they understand that the launch process is gonna suck. There's going to be a lot of issues and they're going to have to like work through them. So I think that more focus, like the more control they can have over like the experience and being able to put out updates on every level.
And I mean, Android users are used to suffering on a daily basis. So, I mean, you know, why not use them as guinea pigs for this as well?
Damn. I love that Andy and Kevin aren't here to talk shit. I can just hear Kevin though.
What? Fucking Pixel Boys over here.
How does it break down in the kind of funny office iOS versus Android?
I think it's just Andy and Kevin.
Just Andy and Kevin are on Android?
Mm-hmm.
Peasants.
Someone in the chat did ask at the beginning of the day, at the beginning of the show, like, oh, won't Kevin be mad that we're talking about like Cuphead screencast news? It's like, you know what? He's not here to fucking defend it, so.
Yeah, fuck
it's on
Kevin.
Him.
I've been saying it since day one. A final news story of the day. Greg Miller put this one here with a note that says, this will be good for Gary.
I noticed that. Yeah, this will be good for Gary.
Starting with Hello Kitty. Oh, no, sorry. Let me read the headline first. Hello Kitty comes to Animal Crossing Pocket Camp. Does that get you going? Are you a weird Hello Kitty guy? Is there something I don't know?
I at least was. I was a hardcore for about a year Pocket Camp was my obsession.
I thought you were about to say like you're huge into Sanrio.
No, no, no. I'm like, you know, but
Bass Maru just might, gets you going.
I mean, look, I know a lot of, I know a lot of, I can tell you more about the Wildcrats and PJ Masks and Paw Patrol and Pokemon and My Little Pony than I should ever, than a 46-year-old man should ever know. Because I have a 7-year-old daughter.
That's what
and she knows this shit, and I inherit it all through osmosis. I've been accused of being a brony because I know all about the ponies. When you've got kids, trust me, you just, you can't avoid it. You know about, but there's no way to avoid this shit. But strangely, Hello
Who's
Kitty
your favorite
is,
pony?
Rarity.
Yeah.
Because she's fancy.
Starting with Hello Kitty and Cinema Roll on July 11th, in-game items featuring popular Sanrio characters are coming to Nintendo's Animal Crossing Pocket Camp mobile game for a limited time. The free Animal Crossing Pocket Camp Sanrio Characters Collection event gives players the opportunity to obtain adorable in-game items like sofas, beds, hats, and dresses featuring various Sanrio characters. The free Animal Crossing Pocket Camp Sanrio Characters Collection event Jesus, guys. Jesus. That's what
the
you're
going to name it. Step aside, Endgame.
Yeah.
The most ambitious crossover event of all time.
Sanrio and Animal Crossing. It also makes a lot of sense.
It does.
Oh, yeah.
Like, good for them. It gives players the opportunity to do things that I already said. The Animal Crossing Podcast Sanrio Characters Collection event will also see Sanrio characters featured in weeks of in-game rewards and events. A Hello Kitty bow special in-game gift will be given to all Animal Crossing Pocket Camp players from July 11th to July 22nd. Jesus Christ. These words. This is like when Greg has to read Pokemon things. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just, I'm sure someone understands what a Gyarodite scavenger hunt is.
Do you want me to read the last part? I'll do it for you.
Yeah, please do.
Okay,
Gary.
I'll take it off your hands. Please do. Because I actually like this. This actually might be, I don't give a shit about Hello Kitty, but I'm reading this. I'm like, maybe I should get back into Pocket Camp. Fortune cookies in the Sanrio Characters Craft Collection will come packed with cute rewards. How can you say no to that
shit? How can you say no, man?
Players can participate in Sanrio Characters Goals number 1 for exciting rewards such as animal maps and fortune cookies. Items that feature Sanrio characters will be rolled out gradually, with Items Collection 1 launching on July 11th featuring Hello Kitty and Cinema Roll. In late July, Collection 2 will feature Pom Pom Purin and My Melody. And in early August, Collection 3 will feature Little Twin Stars and Caropi.
Caropi, baby. I remember Caropi.
Caropi.
He's the homie for sure. The Bats Maru was always my dude.
I know nothing of anything.
You don't?
They completely passed me by.
No.
Well, now you can learn, Barrett. Get your Animal Crossing Pocket Camp ready and get ready to Sanrio.
Yes. You can't keep me away, Tim.
Are you ready for the free Animal Crossing Pocket Camp Sanrio Characters Collection?
I want to bust open some of those fortune cookies.
Hell yeah, dude. I love fortune cookies. They're so good.
You know, I got bored of fortune cookies. Remember when fortune cookies used to actually tell your fortune?
Yeah.
They don't anymore. They just say things like, you are very handsome. It's or like, be nice to
thank
people.
You.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. They don't really tell you your fortune anymore.
You know something that I'll never think is not funny?
What's that?
Like mean fortune cookies. Like when people like prank fortune cookies.
Oh, yeah. And they have like horrible things in them. Yeah.
Like, because I remember in Chinatown in San Francisco, there's a place you can go and you can just get custom things made.
Right.
And it's just so funny. Like, I just love it so much. All right.
So the Pocket Camp's exciting, but it's very far away, Tim.
It is very far away. Gary, if I want to know what was coming to Mom and Grab Shops today, where would I look?
That would be the official list of upcoming software across each and every platform, as listed by the Kinda Funny Games Daily show hosts each and every weekday.
Fuck you, Tim.
Thank you. Thank you very, very, very much for that. I was gonna try to do something about fortunes being far away, but
okay,
I got all caught up with it. Like I didn't know where I was going. You know
I appreciate it though.
But we got there.
Whichever way you get there, the ends justify the means.
Out today, Dr. Mario World has been released a day early and is now available on iOS and Android. Early word on the street is that people aren't liking it too much.
See, when I first saw this on the list this morning, Tim, I said, oh, shit, that, I've got to go get it. But then you said, hold your horses.
I saw a Verge article that was saying that it's more Candy Crush than original Dr. Mario.
I mean, I like a good Match 3 game. Is that what it is?
I think they're talking more in terms of microtransactions.
Oh, monetization.
Bullshit-ass time limits and all that stuff.
See, I always thought Nintendo were better than that. I mean, I'm gonna check it out because I want to see for myself if it's predatory or if it's, you know, kind of, give me your money. Because, I mean, I always liked the way that they did it with Mario Run.
Mm-hmm.
You get a free demo.
Mm-hmm.
You pay $10 to unlock the whole game, and that's the last time that Nintendo will ever ask you for money. I think that's I mean, you can definitely buy little extra bonuses. What's that?
I think they learned to not do that model.
Yeah, it just didn't work.
Fire Emblem Heroes.
I guess but yeah, I always thought Nintendo. I don't know. I always liked the fact that I never thought them getting. And who knows if they are? If they haven't got involved in any of that, give me your money kind of bullshit, I will be disappointed. I'm gonna download it today and check it out.
You know, they've only released Super Mario Brothers once, right?
Right.
Super Mario Brothers 3 once.
Right.
When they put out a new Pokemon game, there's only one version.
Yeah.
You know, they're not money hungry. They don't find ways to double, triple, quadruple sales. Bear with me. The complete collection coming to PS4, Xbox One, Switch, and PC. They are billions. Coming to PS4. Oh, here we go. Umahara Kawasi.
Fresh.
On Switch. Senran Kangua Peach Ball. Peach Ball. What the fuck? On Switch. Kaika, a puzzle adventure on PC. Sinners on PC. Adventures of Isabel Fine, murder on rails. Coming to PC.
I might have to check that out. That looks good.
Master of the Forbidden Sea on PC. Old War 2 on PC. Hyper Light Ultimate on Switch. Call of Duty Black Ops 4's Operation Apocalypse Z DLC on PS4. Red Dead Online this week. Red Dead Online players who complete a total of 10 daily challenges starting today and before July 16th will earn the new Explorer Care Package to help them across the frontier with useful items such as 60 poison arrows, 100 rounds of varmint cartridges, 5 tins of Jolly Jacks, and much more.
What the fuck is Red Dead Online, yo? What the shit was that?
You don't want some Jolly Jacks?
I want some good old varmint cartridges, you know what I'm saying?
New dates. Telefrag coming to PSVR July 19th. Biotope Aquarium Simulator.
I'm on it. I'm looking at it.
Let's check it out.
It's coming to Steam on July 23rd. I get that the simulator games at this point are just kind of like, fuck it. Anything,
you know,
anything
I used to,
goes.
Let me tell you something, Tim. I used to keep tropical fish.
Yeah?
Yeah. When I was a kid, I kept a tropical fish tank, and I even kept piranha fish at one time.
Whoa.
And
did you ever stick your finger in? Just to
see? We had to feed it live goldfish. It was
holy shit.
At first, it was how cool, but then eventually you would just like throw the fish in and fucking look the fuck away.
Yeah, because
it was not pretty.
Really?
Oh yeah.
Here's Biotope? Here's my thing. Growing up as a young child, we had Roller Coaster Tycoon. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
We had even The Sims, we had SimCity, we had all this stuff. It's like, of course a kid wants to make a roller coaster that can toss people off and see if they die.
Right.
Of course you want to make The Sims and not give them a bathroom and see what happens. Like, there's fun to this. No kid liked the simulation part of taking care of their fish.
No, though, that was the point.
They're literally using
Pac
Bell's canon music.
Keeping tropical fish is no joke. Keeping the waters clean, pH and alkaline levels and all that kind of shit, and giving them the right kind of food, the temperature has to be just right. It's not easy to keep tropical fish.
I understand.
But some people really enjoy that. I actually think this could be good for a certain kind of gamer. I think this could be really fun. You know, you got to take care of the fish. You want a thriving fish tank. This could be like a relaxing, chill kind of game, but with deep simulation. I actually think this could be good.
Items.
I understand it's not your cup of tea, Tim, because it's not extreme.
Yeah,
but,
I guess you're right. I need something a little bit more extreme.
You need Extreme Aquarium Simulator.
Yes. God, come back to me then. Let me know what's going on. Next up, we got
what
Gravity.
If you could build, what if you could build a roller coaster for the fish? Flinging fish out of the tank.
This guy has the good ideas. Gravity Ghost Deluxe Edition coming to PS4 on August 6th. And some deals of the day. We got a real good one for you today from Reclusive Dragon. This is a deal of the day. Domino's Australia has a deal for $59.95 for Final Fantasy XIV Complete Edition, 3 large pizzas, a garlic bread, and a 1.25-liter drink.
Holy fuck!
That's awesome.
The same price of the game, and it's delivered. I'm having a pizza party.
They deliver the whole fucking thing to you. The game and the pizzas.
And the pizzas.
Garlic bread and a soda. Holy shit, that's your fucking weekend taken care of right there.
Oh, you gotta love it, man. You gotta love it.
That is a sick deal. Why don't we have that in the US?
I don't know.
This is supposed to be the greatest country in the world, Tim. What the fuck is going
Australia,
on?
Now it's
what
Australia,
happened?
Yeah.
Yeah, damn.
If you want a
how
MAGA,
fast that happens.
If you're serious about MAGA, this is how you fucking do it.
This is how you do it?
This is how you do it with this Domino's deal. Get that shit over here, Domino's.
Yeah, let's
or someone else will do it.
Yes, it'll be Gary. Gary Witta.
I'll do it.
Making America great again, one pizza at a time.
That's right.
Oh, man. It's time for some reader mail. Before we get to the reader mail, let me tell you that you can write into patreon.com/kindoffunnygames where you can get the show ad-free. to write in your questions. But speaking of ads, this episode is brought to you by Hims. You've heard us talking about Hims and how they're helping guys look their best. If you haven't yet, it's time to see what they're all about. 66% of men start to lose their hair by age 35. And once you notice thinning hair, it can be too late.
Tell me
about
it.
Luckily, Andy and Nick, they figured it out, and they've been using Hims for years. Thanks to science, baldness can be optional. The solution is forhims.com, a one-stop shop for hair loss, skincare, and sexual wellness for men. Hims is helping guys be the best version of themselves with licensed physicians and FDA-approved products to help treat hair loss. Nick Scarpino's looking better than he ever has, and I would credit his hair almost fully.
That might be why I had that dream when me and Barrett were frolicking on the couch, tickling each other, because Dick's been looking so good. That psychologically could have leached into my
Nick.
Brain.
You're
just
thinking about the Nick hair. Yeah. Hims was created by a guy who knows some men's health conversations are easier online than in person. No more awkward in-person doctor's visits or long pharmacy lines. For Hims connects you to real doctors online, which could save you hours. Completely confidential and discreet. All great things. You can get it now. Listeners can get started with the Hims complete hair kit for just $5 today, right now, while supplies last and subject to doctor's approval. You can see the website for full details and safety information. This could cost hundreds if you went to the doctor or a pharmacy somewhere else. Go to forhims.com/gamesdaily. That's forhims.com/gamesdaily. forhims.com/gamesdaily. Now, time to talk about reader mail. But before we do that, I just want to let everybody know that sometimes I get really awkward right before or after the ad read, and I just sound like I'm saying a lot of words. It's because there's a thing where we're not supposed to use swear words 20 seconds before or after.
Oh, did I? You should tell me that as well, though. I didn't know that.
It's fine. It's fine. You know? So I'm just like, I'm always like extra cautious where I'm like,
trying to prolong it. Yeah.
How do we get away from the shit that was just said? I can say that now because I think it was like 20 seconds. You know what I mean? It was about. Let's get into the reader mail. The 2038 Pokemon CEO once again writes in, "When is the correct time to announce a video game? We have Square Enix, who announces before the director even knows what's going on. Then you have your Rocksteady, who's quite literally a rock and not moving. Announcing too early leads to fans complaining and wondering what's taking so long. Announcing too late leads to constant leaks and hype rising to unrealistic standards. But a shorter announcement to release time, announcing too early stops leaks but makes us wonder why you should have waited. In the case of Final Fantasy VII Remake, it stops all talks of us wanting a remake like how we bugged Square for years." What do you think, Gary?
I would err on the side of announcing later. I understand announcing too early leads to fans complaining and wondering what's taking so long. I get that. Kind of not dissimilar to what we were talking about earlier with No Man's Sky and, you know, hype and too many E3s. The second part, that announcing too late leads to constant leaks and hype riding to... I mean, I can understand that, again, the longer you're trying to keep something secret, you know, the harder it can be. Mm-hmm. I guess I see both sides of it. If I had to err on one side or the other, I'd go later than earlier.
Yeah, because it is very rare that we get a game announcement where, let's say, it gets announced at E3 and then it comes out months after that where we didn't know about it already.
Right.
You know, like we famously talk about Fallout 4 being this like, that's how you release a game. Announced at E3, put it out in November. But it's like, we all knew about Fallout 4. We all knew it was going to be announced at E3. Like, that wasn't a surprise, you know? Like, the game was still happening. And that game leaked more than I think any game has ever leaked, besides maybe the Assassin's Creed games of all time, right? I personally think that every developer has their library of content, right? And I think that you kind of need to have different levels. There needs to be the games that are the imminent. We make the announcement, it's coming soon. But I also like everyone kind of having the big tentpole games that are like, we're building to it. The Death Strandings, Final Fantasy VII Remix, Metroid Prime. You know, it's like, I like the idea that, yeah, we know what we're getting kind of month to month over the next year. But I like looking forward to these bigger releases to kind of like have something exciting to look forward to at the next convention, that like we'll have that question of like, oh, are we going to see more of it? Are we not? Like, just, I think that it's fun, and not all games need to be this. Here's announced, now it's out. Cause I feel like that at some point turns into this, culture that we're seeing now with, music kind of feeling disposable. You know, it's like when back in the day, albums mattered. Now it's just single. And it's been that way for so long. Musicians put out a new EP, and people stop listening to it a month later asking for the next thing.
Don't you like it though when they do those surprise drops, like Beyonce Absolutely. Drops Lemonade with no warning? Or That's remember great. It was a big deal after, I mean, the movie ended up being disappointed, but after the Super Bowl, they did that Super Bowl ad Netflix for that Cloverfield movie, yep. and it's going to get yeah. available right mm-hmm. after the Super Bowl. That was awesome.
Yeah.
Made you want to check it out right away.
And that's my thing is I like the breadth of it. I like getting that, but then also getting the things where it's like, oh, this is going to happen eventually. But I don't know. It's just hard. I just don't want to see video games get to a point where it just feels disposable, where it's always on to the next thing immediately.
Right.
Like, I like the idea that we're waiting for something so that when we get it, and if it's good at the end of the day, like Death Stranding is going to be a perfect example of there's so much hype and there's been so much time that it's either going to be fucking great or it's going to be seen as a massive disappointment. Like, I don't yeah. think there's room for in between with that. Right. But that's what you get going into there when you announce games that way.
I would like to see a little bit more, a few more, like taking that the idea from music and from movies, the surprise album drop. You mm-hmm. know, completely theoretically, let's say that Cuphead 2
yeah.
was announced. There was a big news today on, not only are we announcing Cuphead 2, it's out today. And I mean, like, what the shit?
Yeah.
Like, that would be great. I wouldn't want to see that all the time, but every now and again, I feel like that would just keep us on our toes, keep the industry a little bit more, you know, you never quite know what's around the corner.
Yeah.
I like that.
I totally agree with that. We've seen that before, and it's not so much been with, like, I don't think we've seen too many examples of success of that. Financially
right,
for
right.
people. PT, the demo that came out from Konami, they did that. And that was awesome. Like, that was such a moment where they owned conversation for a month because of that drop. But then you see a lot of games. Like, I think we don't see too many, like, and this game's out today announcements anymore at these E3s and Gamescoms and things like that, because it gets caught up in the shuffle. You know, games take way longer to make than music does or movies do, things like that. So it's like, you can't just put it out without the marketing and hype going into it.
But. I hear you.
Next question. This comes from Fendi. Fendi says, what's up, Tim and Gary? Since yesterday was hashtag National Video Game Day, I'd like to know, what are the three games each that influenced you guys the most and made you want to work in the video game sphere? Thanks for everything you guys do, and have a great day.
Well, what are your three?
Games that influenced... I don't know that there was necessarily a game that influenced me to want to work in video games directly. Like, it's more of like, I just love video games, and it's like, well, I guess I want to do this. Games that influenced me in my life the most, the first one to come to mind would have to be Tony Hawk's Pro Skater. Because I feel like...
Skate better.
But no, I feel like just, and we've talked before about the soundtracks and stuff like that.
Yeah.
That game introduced me to, like, a vibe that I really liked. Like, the urban aesthetic.
The culture.
The culture of, like, underground hip-hop and things
was
that, like that.
Was that your scene when you were a kid? Were you
yeah,
into that
definitely.
Shit?
Oh, yeah. I mean, could you not be into that shit if you, like, were growing up in the 90s? Like, that's
right.
just kind of like Tony Hawk landed in 900, and you're like, whoa, dude.
Right, right.
That's fucking cool.
Were you watching a lot of MTV in the 90s, that shit?
Oh, yeah.
What were you watching?
Oh, everything, dude. Real World, you kidding me? All that stuff.
You loved all that shit, yeah. Road Rules, yeah.
Oh, yeah, dude. I was all about that.
Yeah.
The Miz.
Cribs.
Oh, yeah. True Life. TRL in general. Yeah, I was all over that stuff. But anyway, Tony Hawk's Pro Skater, I give a shout out to that. I'd probably give a shout out to Smash Brothers Melee in particular,
mm-hmm.
because that it was such a Nintendo museum of history. So kind of coming in 2001, there was a lot of games I'd never heard of. Like, back then, I didn't know Captain Falcon, what the fuck he was from, or Ness being from Earthbound, or definitely not Marth and Roy from Fire Emblem. Like, that game kind of influenced me to want to go back and play all these games from Nintendo's history that weren't Mario or Zelda or Metroid. You know?
So you wanting to get involved in the games industry was more like of a cumulative thing? It wasn't about one or two games in particular?
Yeah, like I don't think when I was really little, like a dumbass kid, like I was like, I want to make video games, but like that was just because I was in third grade reading EGM and like
I was the same.
And it felt like, oh, that sounds cooler than anything else. And like you see all the ads for like
yep.
colleges, like you could be a game designer. I'm not gonna be a game designer. Fucking look at me. But at some point when I like had more realistic thoughts, I always wanted to do video. So it's like
right.
there are things that influenced me to want to do video, like Jackass comes to mind.
Right.
It's not a video game. But then at some point it's like, what do I want to make videos about? Oh, I love video games. Cool. That works.
And now look at you.
And now look at me. I make videos about video games. Holy shit, I made it.
Were your parents supportive of you being 100%. Into games and wanting to make a career out of
All
video
the
games?
Time. I mean, it's funny to bring that up because like they were so supportive of my dumbass bullshit Like, I invented Let's Plays. I don't know if I told you this, Gary Winnip, but back in the day, I used to play Tom and Jerry on the Super Nintendo.
Okay.
And I had the brilliant idea to play and put a VHS in the VCR and record it.
Okay.
So that I could watch my gameplay back.
All right.
Why would I want to do that? I don't fucking know. But
why
I did
does
it.
Anybody do it today, you know? We don't know.
Exactly. But I did that shit. So yeah, stay tuned for some hot Tom and Jerry streams at some point.
Holy shit, I never knew that you I'm sitting here with the inventor of Let's Plays. It's fucking badass.
Hey man, Gray needs to add that to his repertoire of his introduction.
Shout out to that game.
Now that you're over 30, you got to add something else to your, to your bio.
Inventor of Let's Plays. Damn. What games influenced you?
I was thinking about it. So I grew up through a different kind of path that you guys did. I talked about this on the show before. Instead of like NES and Sega and stuff like that, we had the Commodore 64 on the Spectrum. And for me, I would say, I'm going to cheat a little bit, but I would say definitely the one that I always remember, and I've been waiting to play this on my stream. I want to introduce my followers to it because it's one of my all-time favorite games of all time. I'd be amazed if you've heard of it. It's a game called Paradroid. And it came out on the Commodore 64 in 1985. And it was this brilliant... Are you going to try and pull it?
Yeah.
Okay.
What's it called again?
Paradroid. P-A-R-I-P-A-R-A. Like paranoid, but with a droid.
All right.
It's not going to... It doesn't look like... I mean, it's a Commodore 64 game from 1985, so it's not going to look like anything. But it was a brilliantly designed game. I was actually involved recently in an attempt to... in an attempt to remake it. And you play this. You play this little droid, that thing up there, the little robot there that says 001 on it. And basically, this is a big, everything you're seeing here, this is a big spaceship. Uh-huh. And the droids have all gone rogue, like they've all gone haywire. And they're a danger to the ship now. And you go on board the ship as this little, what's called an influence device. And your objective is to take over other, you play this little mini game to try and short circuit the droids and take them over. And you start as a 001 with like almost no power. But you can basically hijack and become more powerful droids if you can take them over. And you get better guns, better weapons. You essentially get to inhabit the body of the more powerful droid for a short period of time. And you play that little transfer again. So now he's a 7 foot, the 001 just became a 742. So it's faster, more agile, got more better armor, better weapons. And the objective of the game is basically to wipe out all the other droids. And you can do that either by destroying them or taking them over in a transfer game. And it's brilliantly designed. I really, really wish they would do it. Like I said, we tried to remake it a year or two ago. It's really, really great. I'm going to be playing it on my stream soon.
Yeah.
That game, probably more than any other, got me into video games.
That is incredible. I'll never understand when you look at some of these old games. Like I even remember a lot of NES games being young, playing them and just being
this
like...
This would have worked great on NES.
But like, how the fuck did we understand what to do?
Right.
You know what I mean?
Well, like you had a little... when you took the cassette tape out, you had a little instruction booklet.
It would kind of be like, okay, but like whatever you just explained, yeah, there's the droids and the this and the that. And then you look at that and you're just like, this is a bunch of colors that should not be next to each other and lines, you know? Like fucking, hey, can you Google Tom and Jerry on Super Nintendo? Let's show them a real game.
Okay, this is your Paradroid. Okay. And then Tim, I was going to say, just in general, I would say all the old Infocom games really got
Infocom?
Me in.
Infocom?
You never played the Infocom adventure games? The Tex Barrett knows what I'm talking about.
No, I just saw a screen of Tom and Jerry. And you saw something else? Okay. Flashback.
Yeah, get in there.
Is this it, Tim?
Hold on.
This is it?
Yep.
This is definitely it, dude.
Is this a game that you went to the store and you saw Tom and Jerry and you were like, I got to get this game?
No, this was a game. So I've said this many times. Like, I'm lucky to grow up when I did. I was born in 1989. So by the time I was a video game playing.
You were born the year after I started working professionally in video games.
There you go.
I was reviewing and professionally playing video games before you were born.
I love
you
that.
You young whippersnapper.
I love that.
It's amazing. Now look at you. Now you've surpassed me.
I'm 30 years old.
Now you're Tim Geddes.
I'm Tim fucking Geddes, bitch.
Tim fucking Geddes.
So, but the thing that I'm lucky for is that like being born in 1989 meant that by the time I was like five, it's mid-90s, which means that all the Mario Brothers games had already come out.
Right.
You know what I mean? We already gotten some. Link's Awakening was there for me. Super Mario World. So it's like we'd go to garage sales and just get like 30 games at a time. And it was just, I just got to play everything at once. So it's like, this was just one of the classics.
So this is like, you picked this up like as a cheap used cartridge?
It was, like literally we would get like, Kevin's mom would take us to garage sales and we would just get cartridges by the, like, just cartload.
Right. You would go like...
Literally 30 games at a time for like $10.
You would go like flea markets and things like that? Okay.
And so this was a definitely a come up.
Is this game any good?
You know what? No, it's not. But bring this up. There's a plot going on here.
Where's Tom?
He's trying to fuck you up. You know what I mean? Tom's always just getting in your way. But you're right now, so you were... What? Go back a second. Like, scroll back.
Scroll back.
So... Right now, he's in a camera. Like, he's in a film camera going. I don't remember why. But scroll forward a little bit more.
Like, over here?
A little more? There we go.
Yeah.
So now you're in the theater. The first level, you're outside of the theater. You're kind of breaking in, and you go in the camera. And then now you're just like, I loved this little, like, weird skateboard thing that physics don't make sense. But yeah, and then at some point you end up at a junkyard, whatever.
I want to show you something that might interest you. Barrett, can you go to a channel on YouTube called GameSack?
All right. Last one, though.
Yeah, just the last one. I know we're asking you to pull a lot of stuff today. Sorry. Go to GameSack and pull out their most recent video. It should be called Unreleased Games 3. And then the one of the very first ones, yeah, right there. So this was an episode that they did recently. I like this channel GameSack. They kind of pick out like really obscure games, and just scrub forward a little bit.
All right, hold on.
I think it's the first. You went back.
All right, scrub forward.
Okay, right there. Oh, this was an unreleased Tom and Jerry game for the Super Nintendo that they had found an early build of. This never came out, but this was
for the Super Nintendo.
Yeah, this was for the Super Nintendo.
Wow.
Never Jesus. Released. This is like a work in progress build that they got a ROM for.
Whoa.
That's actually just a cartoon. It's not that good. So yeah, I happened to see that the other day. Yeah.
You know?
Some history there.
Some history. Including who invented Let's Plays. Now it's time for You're Wrong. Actually, no, first it's time for Squad Up. Steven Kerbal. His PSN name is Steven 651, Steven 651. He says, my 23rd birthday was the other day, and it kind of helped me realize that I don't have too many friends and none that play games. So I figured I'd try to fix that. I've been a kind of funny best friend for years now, but haven't really interacted with the community outside of the New York meetup. So I think it's time to change that. I'm from the New York area, play a little of everything, and I'm down to chat with anyone. So hit me up. Hit up Steven 651.
I'm going to do it right now.
Hell yeah.
Literally right now on the PlayStation app.
Steven.
Oh, it's going to make me sign in. Fuck you. I'm going to do it later. But I'm bullshit. Why do they make things so difficult? I don't want to sign
man.
In right
it's
now.
Some bullshit.
Should already be signed in.
No, that's not for you wrong. Let's see what we got wrong. Seeing that it's me and you, Gary, I don't think we got anything
No, we
wrong.
Don't get anything wrong. But
Game Jumper X says, No Man's Sky took about 1 year to start giving amazing updates, not 2 years. The first big update was called Next. The new update coming
this
summer is called Beyond. Okay, so Beyond's
okay,
not
yeah, yeah. No, that's right, yeah.
I love No Man's Sky at launch because I listened to Greg and Kevin to know what to actually expect, and I have been back for the big updates. Looking forward to Beyond.
Technically, it was you that got that wrong, not me.
Yeah.
Just
yeah,
saying.
You're right. Just if saying. We're, if we're like going tit for
if
tat
If we're point
here,
scoring here.
What
else you got?
A lot of bullshit, if I'm being honest.
Stop sending that bullshit, you know?
Yeah.
Nothing good? Come on, Bia. Come on, best friends. Try harder. Send in some good shit.
Skate better.
Busting their ass over here.
Fendi has a deal of the day. PlayStation Retro sale going on right now. Titles include Crash Bandicoot, Spyro, and Hitman HD Remake.
Okay.
And that's it.
There you go.
And that's a show.
There it is. That is a show.
It's a full lid.
A damn good show, if I,
it was a good
I
one.
Do say so myself.
Yeah.
Who is going to be hosting the rest of the week? Let's see. Next up, tomorrow, we have Greg and Andrea Renee. That's going to be a fun one. And then Thursday, we have Greg and Andrea Renee, a double feature event.
Wow.
And then Friday, we have me and Greg. So that'll be fun. How come you're not here for Widow Wednesday?
I got to work tomorrow. Greg originally contacted me yesterday and said, "Can you do?" Because I guess he wasn't around today. He said, "Could you do tomorrow? Could you do Tuesday and Wednesday?" And I said, "Sure." You know, I was trying to accommodate Greg, and then he starts shooting his mouth off on Twitter about how he owns me because I accommodate him when he comes crawling to me for favors.
Yeah.
But then it turned out that I have to work on Wednesday. But so that was good. I'm doing today, so I don't have to. Sometimes when I work on Wednesday, I have to, or if I'm out of town, I skip a week. Mm-hmm. But instead, you just get me a day early this week. I'm doing today instead
the
of
Twitch
tomorrow.
Superstar Tuesday fits you, Gary.
Twitcher Tuesday. Maybe that's what we'll call it now. Twitcher Tuesday.
Gotta love it.
Yeah.
Until next time.
Wait.
Oh, whoa.
Book of Eli live commentary stream tonight, twitch.tv/GaryWitter, 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern. Mm-hmm. Hope to see you there.
What time is it in your made-up London times?
Oh, it'll be around 2 o'clock in the morning.
Some GMT.
But if because of time reasons you can't catch it, the whole thing will be archived on Twitch. I'll upload it to YouTube as well. But the best, you'll obviously get the best experience live because I'll be there to answer your questions. Shit like that.
Mm-hmm. Go check that out. And until then, I love you.